landed there, when we did a flyover, you could see south of the facility, the parachutes. My rocket made it there, and I was pretty happy about that. That was,
you could see your parachute?
Yeah, I could see the rocket laying on the desert floor with the parachutes.
Wow.
And I'm going, it was still smoking, and I was going, oh, God, it made it. You know, that was...
What a thrill.
It was. I was I was planted to the wind. It had put me in my seat. And so when we got off the plane, I'm ready to run to the rocket, right? So I'm starting to leave, and then I'm grabbed by these guys, and they threw me in this little golf cart thing. So I thought, all right, we're going to go see the rocket now. No, we went around the plane and headed toward the center hangar. And I'm going, hey, rocket's the other way, you guys, you know.
Yeah.
And they want to hear me. So we go to the center hangar, we pull in there, and we stop. And hangars are really strange-looking hangars as far as aircraft hangars. And neat lights on top. They have these louvers over the lights, and it could light up the area, but I guess you can't see the lights from a distance.
Oh.
So, you know, there's just a lot of little clever little things they had around there. Being kind of a techno person, I guess, even a kid, I was a little nerdy type, I guess, I would notice a lot of technical stuff. And so when we pulled into the hangar, it's empty, but it's huge. I mean, it looks like 4 football fields in that thing. And we stopped about in the center of it, and then these lights come on at all the doorways, little flashing lights like you see on top of a wrecker. And these little poles come up out of the floor with chains on them, so they're like little garden rails everywhere around all the doors. And I'm going, wow, this is neat. I wonder what this is. And all of a sudden, the biggest portion of the floor drops out from under us. It's an elevator. It's huge. Hangar floor is going down.
So the whole floor is dropping.
The whole floor is dropping. We go down probably about 200 feet.
Maybe. Wow.
About 20 stories.
So down 200 feet you go, and what's there?
Right. It's a room. Man alive, it's huge. It's a big arc-type ceiling, like a rainbow.
Now, I saw Independence Day.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what that sounds like.
Yeah, I saw Independence Day, and from what I saw on Independence Day...
Do you think that they had technical advice from somebody who knew?
Yeah, I think so.
To do that movie.
Somebody crawled out and talked and got a good chunk of money. Hope they left.
It should be known, you've been telling this story long before Independence Day, the movie. I just couldn't resist the parallel.
Right.
It's obvious.
Yeah. So that was a factor in deciding whether I would testify to Congress or not about this, which I did April 9th of this year.
Excuse me, David. To what committee did you speak?
It was a joint session of the Senate and Congress. And
really?
They had a special committee formed, and they were there at the... Westin Hotel in a closed-door meeting. And CSETI had orchestrated the whole set of...
Dr. Greer.
Dr. Stephen Greer.
Yes.
CSETI.
Yes.
He had me there as a witness. So, anyway...
God. So, all right. So, back down. Here we are, 200 feet down below the hangar at Area 51, center hangar.
Right.
What's there?
One other... items was way the interesting was the way it was lit. It was always completely lit, but it was like iridescent lighting. You really couldn't see direct lighting coming from anywhere.
Uh-huh.
And it was just neat. I thought that was interesting. Then we rode the little golf cart type thing for quite a ways down until we came up to a big door on, let's see, it was on our left. And the guy gets off the cart. He goes over and he punches a keypad and puts his palm on it. And I thought that was real interesting because, you know, we never see anything like that. I saw it in James Bond movies, but...
He really put his palm on.
Yeah, he put it, and you see a light flash under his palm, and I'm going, wow, a palm scanner. I didn't even know we had that. And and just him tapping the keypad for a lock, that, you know, I never saw anything like that. So, not in the civilian world. So, of course, I was a kid, didn't have a lot of exposure, but still, you know, I just... No, that stuff was not common like it is today.
Nevertheless, open sesame.
The big door opens up, and it's double thick, and this thing finally opens up. And when it opens, the lights come on. And when the lights come on, we go in, and once again, this room's lit really strange. You can look around on the floor, and there's no shadows. Like a paint booth, when you paint a car, there's no shadows in a paint booth. Because a painter can't afford to have a shadow. You get to run the paint, he won't see it.
Of course.
So that's how this entire big work bay was lit up, and I just thought that was kind of neat. So there was a huge something sitting on a big, like a steel table. It was pretty long, probably about 60 feet long. But so,
what was it? What did it look like?
Well, it was under tarps, and when he pulled the tarps back, I went, "Holy cow!" It's an electromagnetic fusion engine. Somewhat similar to mine.
Click, click, click. All of a sudden, here's why they've got you there.
Yeah, I went, oh, it's obvious. I mean, I've got, well, I'm be modest here. Geez, I had a Wright flyer, you know, like Orville Wilbur Wright, pulled up next to a 747. You know, the power differential and the complexity is so diverse, but they both work in the same principle of flight. So my engine was about the size of a watermelon. This thing's about the size of a school bus.
And right. So now you've got to conclude one of two things. Either we have manufactured this, it's ours, and they're showing it to you because you have discovered a similar technology or used similar technology, or it's from elsewhere. I mean, when you look at this thing, what do you conclude?
When I first looked at it, it took me probably about a minute. I was standing there, and they were talking to me. And I really wasn't hearing them that well because I was just staring at this thing.
Sure.
And the first thing that really struck me is the alloys, and it's the material it's made out of, and the manufacturing of it. As big as it was, there's not a single rivet, screw, bolt, seam line, weld line, nothing on it.
It's one continuous piece?
It looked like it grew. It looked like the whole thing looked like it was alive. I mean, it had what I call organic technology.
Can you give us a visual idea of what shape it was or what it looked like?
Think of two octopuses facing each other with all their tentacles interwound with each other like they're having sex.
Okay.
And that's what it looked like.
I've never seen octopus.
Two big round spheres.
I can imagine.
With all this tremendous piping, ducking all through it. What that was, mine was similar in nature, but boy, this thing was just so radically different. Those, I would assume, were more like twin particle accelerators, which they would accelerate the mass, and then they would, the thing had a figure eight pattern to it. So it looked like they were converging the power into a figure eight pattern, which would make a lot of sense. It would give you an infinity loop. And then now that infinity loop would allow you to create the electromagnetic field you need and be a great way to sustain it, which, quite frankly, that was a great day for me because I figured it was like showing you a test, the answers to the test. And I went, cool, this will work. So, then I had to ask him, I thought, hey, guys, if we have this engine, you know, we're about to launch Apollo 14. It's 1971. And I said, Why are we using liquid fuel engines when you guys got this thing, you know? And they go, well, it's still pretty much experimental, son, and you can tell by the damage it's had we're having some problems with it. And that's the reason we brought you in here. We'd like to have your opinion on it. And I went, well, where's the guys that built the thing? Well, they're not here right now. They're on vacation.
Oh, yeah, right.
So, but I knew something wasn't right. It just didn't feel right because I was looking at the alloys. I'm going, I have never seen anything like that in my life. And already I've seen a facility that seemed to be a little bit ahead of the true value hardware. So I'm going, oh, man, what have they got going here? And this thing had something running down its side, which there was a lot of devices or, I don't know what they were, contraptions on this thing. I guess they were some kind of interface or couplings for mass flows of the particle accelerator chambers. But there was a lot of devices on there I didn't recognize. And there was this one thing in particular run down its side, which the only way I can describe it looks like gills of a fish.
Gills of a fish?
Right, and it was like baffles, some kind of baffling system. I'm not sure what these baffles were.
So what did they expect from you? I mean,
an opinion. That's basically what they're looking for. They asked me to take a close look at it and give them my opinion of what I think this thing is or how it functions.
Did you go up and touch it?
Oh yeah. Matter of fact, I wasn't gonna miss this one. And when I got to it, I said, I need to climb up on this thing, take a really good look at it. And I need to look at that damage area. That's what they want to know. They wanted my opinion what happened in that damage area.
Uh-huh.
So when I walked up to it, the first thing I noticed is there's a silhouette of me on it.
Excuse me, a silhouette of you?
Yeah. Now, what did I just tell you about the room?
There's no
shadows in that room.
Oh, that's right. That the lighting was totally even.
Right. How could there be a full silhouette of me on the engine? So I backed off and went, it dissipates. And I got up closer and it becomes really crisp. And then I moved down alongside it, and guess what? The shadow's about a half second behind you. And I'm
wow.
going, I went, oh, God, heat-sensitive recognition alloy. I didn't even know we had such a thing. So I told them I need to crawl up on top of it, and they said, fine.
Right, wait a minute. Heat-sensitive recognition alloy. What you're telling me is that
it's picking up the radiation off my body and reflecting it into a pattern.
And reflecting it into a pattern that lagged your movement a little bit?
Sure, because I moved.
Wow.
And it would have to focus once you get in front of it, so you got, a little...
I understand.
A tenth of a second lag, which is kind of fun. I was waving my arms in front of it, and I looked over at them, and they were frowning a little bit because I guess they figured I didn't caught on to something already. And I'm going, this is cool. So, then I started to crawl down the hole, and they asked me a question, and that's when I knew they were lying. They asked me, where is the circuitry? And
I just heard a big boom on there. Anyway, where is the circuitry?
Yeah, they asked me, where is the circuitry?
Yeah.
And I said, good question. And I started looking at it. Now, see, if you look at particle accelerators and any of the type of fusion things, I had miles of wiring in mine. The reason being is that if you remember the old Fat Boy, the atomic bomb, it built like a soccer ball.
Yes, sir.
And remember all the thousands of wires going to every point of the pentagon shape.
Right.
All right. Those are wires that cause the initial blast that has to be, that's why they had such a hard time with it. It had to be a 360-degree pattern blast simultaneously blowing the particles into each other.
Oh, correct, yes.
So, anyhow, this thing had no wiring anywhere. And the first question I asked, you guys didn't take the wiring off, and they said no. And I'm sitting there going, now, this is their engine. This is bull. They're lying through their teeth. And I just thought, okay, well, let me look at it. So I'm looking at it, and they're right, man. There's not a single wire anywhere. But there's something else. There's a trunk case running down across this thing that looks like almost like a vertebrate column. And it's just like a big bundle of tubes, which... we could call fiber optics today. But this thing, when the tubing would run across the center of the thing, it'd cascade over its sides, and then it'd break off into smaller tubes, but it was a pattern of all these thousands of tubes. And I went, this looks familiar. And I thought, good God, I've seen this before. It's a brainstem. This is a neural synaptic.
A neural body. Network, like
it's a neural network running over its body. And I went, that's the circuitry. And I thought, wonder why these guys hadn't seen that. So, there was a liquid in these tubes, and I could see, a break in them where they had some of them drained. And I stepped down in the hole to take a look. I said, I need to step down this thing because this is such a mind rush for me. I've worked on something and it's small, about the size of a watermelon, and now here it is, advanced concept size, big enough you can crawl in it.
Well, I see why they had you there.
And I said, I need to step down this hole and take a look. And they said, yeah, be careful. So I get down there and I look around and I saw a bunch of other things, just outrageous stuff. And I knew right then that this is not from our technological base. It's nowhere near.
Did you raise this point with them?
Well, when I came out and I'm standing up on top, they asked me another question. They asked me... I guess this is when things went bad. They asked me if I knew exactly how the fuel was loaded. And I went, wait a minute. If this is your engine, you don't know anything about circuitry, and then this is not your engine. And we have a phrase in the South, it's not from the neighborhood, is it, boys? And I said, let me guess, this is a power plant come out of an engine by the way the parameter looks. It's been ripped out or torn out. So there's a spacecraft somewhere. Where's the craft? And if it's got a craft, it's got an occupant. What'd you do with them people?
Huh.
And they exploded. They were so furious. because I guess they realized maybe I wasn't just a naive 17-year-old techno nerd punk.
Mm.
So anyway, I'm so angry and hurt. I'm getting off this engine. They started to send the little sergeants up to get me. I said, I'll get down. So I'm getting down off this thing, and I grab those baffle plates, and guess what happens, Art?
What?
It's not blue-white swirling. It looks like a red-orange tornado extending through the alloys. And I pull my hand off, stick my hands back on it, and it comes back in. Again, same thing. And I just realized what happened when I pulled away from the engine. You know what it was doing? It's not heat-sensitive recognition. It's not picking up on heat radiation. It's picking up on mental energy. It's a symbiotic engine. It's reading my own mental energy. When I first approached it, I was sitting there going, oh, wow, then, you know, awe and amazement, just having a good time. When I came down, I am angry, hurt, definitely upset, and
it reacted differently. It
visualized what I was feeling in those baffles, and I'm going, oh, God, it's a symbiotic engine, this thing that's recognizing mental energy.
But that absolutely makes sense with what you told us about the neural network, or what seemed
to be
a neural network. That makes absolute
sense.
Yeah,
it all came clear, because when a pilot sits down in this thing, he will strap in, whoever will strap in this thing, and his brain pattern will merge with the synaptic firing order of that engine, and probably the spacecraft has its own system, so all three of them are independent ascension entities of their own, but yet a symbiotic community working with in harmony with each other.
How much more did you get to see, or did they rush you out?
They grabbed me, and we went out in a hurry, but I was turning around looking at the thing, and I knew what it was. It was a symbiotic engine.
When you testified in front of Congress, and you told them all this,
I'm facing 20 years under oath, perjury sentence.
I know, I understand. What kind of reaction did you get? Did they laugh?
No. I have to say, it was not a happy moment. It's interesting. It's an age thing. The younger members of Congress are standing there looking like, it stunned them, right? And they're trying to go, name of God, you know, what is this? Some of the older members, really elderly ones, they were squirming. They looked more uncomfortable. And I'm going, they know. And that's what I told them. I said, y'all know. Not all of you, but I can see your faces. I know some of you know.
Well, it's no wonder Stephen Greer brought you to Washington.
Yeah.
It's no wonder.
He said, I was a litmus test, and I turned pink. Actually, I turned red. I was I got into the testifying. I actually got angry. I really vented on him. And One senator asked me, you're not intimidated by all this power, are you? And I said, power? I said, when you die, you're going to meet power, pal, on the other side. This is man's world. This is not power.
Well, listen, I wasn't privy to how all of the testimony. I know that you and many others testified in Washington behind closed doors.
Right.
What was the net effect of that, do you think?
You know, it was the reason I went was that Dr. Greer said there's a possibility that they may do a two-way disclosure. And I thought, you know, for 26 years I've been quiet about this story. It wasn't until March of this year I talked about it. My wife, for 15 years, I never said a word to her about this. So I've been totally quiet. And I thought, I just may get a chance to hear the rest of the story from the other side, and if I've been invited, and if I don't go, I will kick myself for the rest of my life.
Now, when you left Area 51, before you left, they must have said something like, son, you keep your lips buttoned.
There was more of the story. When we went upstairs, there was a real problem we had. We ran into multiple problems. First is, they now know I'm not cooperative, because I'm more ticked about this.
I just want to finish up very quickly. What did they tell you about opening your mouth?
Well, it's a long story, but...
Short version.
The short version is I got out of there with the help of LeMay, and it was quiet for this. That was the end of my summer vacation in my junior year of high school. I spent my summer vacation. So next year I graduated from high school, and I was getting ready to go to OSU, Ohio State University, in theoretical astrophysics, and I never made it because a guy from DOD stepped up in my graduation line and handed me a letter and opened it up and said, "Greetings. It's June 10th, 1972. I'm drafted on the spot." And they came and got me, and they just took me. And I finally ended up spending, after we compromised, 10 years in the United States Navy.
10 years?
So the thing was, we just kind of let it blow by, and I was quiet, and I had a 3D career, science, and I just didn't want to,
want to blow your career.
No, I'm not going to say anything, guys.
And somehow, Dr. Greer of CSETI talked you into testifying.
Right, because, a lot of things. Independence Day movie, the attitude of the public has shifted tremendously.
Oh, yes.
And, see, it would be suicide to do this 20 years ago. Your career would be shot.
Yep.
You wouldn't be able to interface with anything.
All right. Now, you understand that there are a lot of people sitting out there this morning who are going, yeah, right.
Yeah. Well,
what a fish story.
Right.
So I want to expose you to the public. Let us begin. East of the Rockies, top of the morning. You're on the air with David Adair and Art Bell. And where are you?
Good morning, David. Good morning, Mr. Bell. My name is John. I'm calling from Staten Island, New York. Okay, David, I'd like to ask you two things. When are we going to have, I was always a big fan of the Jetsons show. When are we going to have that kind of the cars that can fly around, you know, like on the Jetsons? And also, what is your opinion of the whole thing about gays in the military?
All right, well, that's pretty, well, all right, that's an awfully diverse question. So I'm going to ignore B and go for A. He's right about that. I mean, the kind of engine that you're talking about, if it really was under control, would produce the kind of cars that they have in the Jetsons, right?
Yeah, they would. Now, I don't know whether they're going to fold up into a briefcase like George has got and walk off with it, but it's a different technological problem. But the way they're flying around, there's a machine right now being made by a guy named Mueller, and his Mueller machine is very similar to a Jetsons-type craft, and he is so far along with it that the FAA is trying to figure out how to determine a license for him, because the thing can fly, land, pull into, he did a demonstration, pulled into a driveway at a McDonald's, drove off into a parking lot, took off and flew away. Now, is it a DMV license or it's an FAA license? See, there's all kinds of confusion here. So, but yeah, we're closing in on that type of technology.
So the answer is soon, huh?
Right.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with David Adair and Art Bell. Hello.
Hi, I just wanted to find out if the fusion engine related to the hypothesis of coal fusion that was controversial a few years ago.
All right. Where are you, by the way?
Staten Island.
Staten Island, another New York. All right. It's a good question. I think the answer is no, but we'll ask.
It is no. It's the same process, but apples and oranges are both fruit, but they're totally different of each other.
In other words,
coal fusion is what it is, cold. This is
very hot.
Yeah, this is very hot on the...
again, with temperatures that reach...
Right, 100 million degrees centigrade. And you're pulling out of hydrogen reaction with water, where this is fueled, at least mine was, with deuterium trienium.
Gotcha. Wild card line, you're on the air with David Adair. Hello.
Hello, this is Vince in Chicago.
Hey, Vince.
Mr. Adair, this is quite a shocking story. I know you firsthand have seen the black operations over there at Area 51, and I'm a little shocked and uncomfortable with the idea of a former Nazi running around in a black DC-9 having anything to do with the black operations over there.
Oh, don't kid yourself, sir. A lot of former Nazis ran around in our rocketry programs. In fact, many, many, many. It's a great untold story. Right, David?
Yeah, and he's absolutely right. You should be shocked and a little concerned. That is not a healthy situation.
You know, and it kind of reminds me of one of the stories that Richard Hoagland was talking about on September 12th of this year, when he showed the photo of the Mars Pathfinder, and on the on a plaque on the Pathfinder there was a swastika and a skull and the Palomar Observatory.
And by the way, Vince, for your edification, I talked to Richard Hoagland earlier in the day, and he's done a lot more work on Pathfinder. Expect a show with him in the next few days. No, there's no great mystery about the fact that the Nazis were, in fact, very much part of our early space program. I think after the war, after the war, we kind of divided the Nazis up, didn't we, between the Russians and the Americans, and then the race began.
Yeah, the superpower is born out of the same pot.
Yeah. All right, first time caller line, you're on the air with David Adair and Art Bell.
This is Sal from Long Island City, New York.
Hello, Sal.
Thank you. I'm asking David, can you narrow down the size of that engine more specifically? I know you said it's the size of a bus, but a minibus, a commercial bus, a school bus. And I'd like to tell you why I'm asking.
Okay.
I've just finished
reading a Greyhound.
Hello?
A Greyhound.
A Greyhound bus, big.
Yeah. Well,
that suggests that it didn't come from the craft that crashed at Roswell.
No, no. This thing, if anything, would have been the size of the craft at Roswell. If this is something
That's right.
All right. You were going to say why you were asking the question.
Well, that's the reason, because that suggests then that they got this from another craft. Something else crashed, and it was even bigger than the thing that came down at Roswell.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know what I think? I think a lot of things come down that we're not told about, my friend.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard back in New York, but there was a gigantic flap in Seattle and Vancouver this last Friday. Something gigantic.
I was listening.
Oh, you were.
Program. Yes,
oh, you were. All right.
Right there with you.
All right. Well, the official NORAD/Air Force explanation is an SL-12 rocket splashed into the Pacific.
Yeah. Other people saw it inland, saw it hovering, saw it moving slowly like
that's
a blimp.
That's right. You've got it.
And saw 10 or 12 objects.
Thousands.
10 to 15.
Thousands of people, sir.
That's right.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. David.
Yes.
You think that's true? I mean, you know, we hear about crashes of things re-entering, things landing, stories from South America, stories from Mexico, where UFOs are so common. In fact, they've had airliner collisions in Mexico.
Right.
I mean, incredible stories. So it may well be that things have come down over the years, not just at Roswell, but all over the world. South Africa, you get stories. Do you think that's true?
Oh, yeah. If somebody's coming to visit this planet, they're not just going to focus on the United States. We're not the center of the world, y'all. You know, they're going to go all over the planet. So it'd be everywhere. And it's possible, you know, in this country, we have an open democracy and freedom of information, all that stuff. Other countries, you have military control. So if something goes down over there, it's really easy to cover it up.
I think even here, I'll tell you something. I'll tell you something, David. Out here where I am, Sirius Cactus Country, you know the kind of country it is.
Sure do.
Experimental aircraft go down out here from time to time, and when they do, David, a cordon goes up around the crash site. Nobody gets anywhere near it. They've got guards, they've got vans, special vans, all kinds of stuff, and you don't get anywhere near
it. And they're fast.
Are they fast.
They can be on a site so fast you can't believe it.
That's right. That's exactly correct. We're not that different. Democracy, yes, but military control, you betcha. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with David Adair and Art Bell. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi. Where are you?
I'm in South Texas.
South Texas.
Yeah.
All right. Well, do you have a question?
Yeah, I wanted to ask him if he would make any connection to the AFTI program.
STI?
SDI? No, AFTI. Advanced Fire Technology Integrated.
What does that stand for, that acronym?
Advanced Fighter Technology Integrated.
Oh, I think he mentioned that a little bit earlier.
Yeah, with the Pierre Lab in New Jersey with... research done with McDonnell Douglas on the F-22. They're trying to incorporate now their symbiotic technology where the craft could read the thoughts of the pilot. But also they ran into an interesting problem there, Art. They're having to do a reversal with the system. Sometimes they had to screen the pilot's thoughts away from the craft.
They, instance, say that again?
Well, they had to screen the pilot's thoughts away from the craft because it could get him killed. For instance, the pilot goes home that night.
Yeah.
He or she catches their mate in bed with a whole bunch of other people. So they're having a bad day. Next morning, they got to strap in that fighter, and they're not concentrating. If the aircraft can sense their frustration, it could hesitate. And if it hesitates in a tenth of a second in a dogfight, it makes a difference between you live or die.
Yep. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Art Bell and David Adair. Where are you, please?
New York. I just have to say, of all the people that I have heard give sort of their testimonial to what we all know and have known for a long time, at least people like myself, is true. He is probably the most credible sounding authority that, or eyewitness.
I put him up there. I'll tell you what. I put him up. I put David up there with Colonel Corso. I don't know if you've had an opportunity ever to hear Colonel Corso.
I probably have, but I just am not placing the name. What?
All right, Colonel Corso claims and wrote a book called The Day After Roswell, and he claims, I've interviewed him several times, I heard you say, oh yes, and he introduced, he says, a lot of technology from a crash at Roswell into American private sector industry that accounts for a lot of what we have now, fiber optics and the transistor and a whole bunch of things.
I just have to ask you, Art, are you familiar with a woman, she was a channeler, and she has been channeling messages similar to what your guest the other night was talking about, the intuitive communication process. I believe that's definitely going on with mass numbers in our population around the globe, so that when we do more than likely reach that electromagnetic zero that Greg Braden was talking the other day, so that they can facilitate this change.
Let me ask David about that. David, I had Greg Braden on, a brilliant guy.
Uh-huh.
And he contends, and tomorrow night's guest is going to wind right into what he was talking about, that the Earth's magnetic field, and he can document it, is less by a factor of, well, if it was a 10 a few thousand years ago, it's a 1.5 now.
Right.
And that we're approaching a zero point, a center
right.
point, and that eventually we'll simply stop. There will not be any gravity whatsoever, and then there will be a pole reversal. Are you familiar with that?
Right.
And that the Schumann frequency, the actual vibratory frequency of the Earth, has been increasing.
I don't know about the gravity part, but you're absolutely right about a polar reverse. The Earth's core has showed us through archaeological meteorology that the Earth has reversed its poles several times already.
Mm.
But being the fact that the last time it did it, there wasn't any modern man or anybody around, we don't know about the gravity part, so we'll have to wait and see. But it's just an absolute science fact that the poles have reversed themselves at least half a dozen times.
David, if everything you've said is true tonight, then it's the biggest lie that man has ever told and kept. How do we break all of this open? How do we say enough is enough? I've had a million guests very much like you, people who have seen the things that you say you've seen. It's such a giant lie. How do we break it all open? Any thoughts?
If you can get across to the public, if the public can get across to the government a feeling of, I know this is a word not used very much anymore, it's called forgiveness. But if the government would do a full disclosure, which at the time they made those decisions, they thought they were making the best decisions at that time.
I don't doubt that.
And they really weren't a bad bunch of people. They're just trying to handle a bad situation. And, you know, you just come out of World War II, one of the bloodiest confrontations on the planet. You're going to tell a world weary of war that you may now have to fight an intergalactic battle. You know, yeah, sure, you're going to tell them that.
So, in other words, if they felt they wouldn't get their political heads or their literal heads chopped off.
Right. that if they would disclose, and we're all, you know, hey, we'll forgive you, we'll go on and deal with this information, and let's share it and get it out here and work with it and not be vindictive about it, if they do an honest, full disclosure on their part, I think they're looking for a way out. You know, the question I had for the Congress was, why do you guys let this hearing happen? There's no reason for you guys to let Dr. Greer and CSAI have this hearing unless you guys are being pushed by something.
And what did they say?
It was dead quiet. I mean, it was E.F. Hutton in the room. And I smiled at him and said, let me guess, is somebody coming to dinner and it's not Sidney Poitier? And they did not look happy at all.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with David Adair and Art Bellheim.
Hi, this is Sandy from Las Vegas.
Hello, Sandy.
Hello, Mr. Adair. I had a chance to see you when you were here last year with the Whole Life Expo.
Oh, okay.
And I really must compliment you. This is the fourth time I've heard a little bit of your story, and you're an excellent speaker. You make it fresh every time. A couple things you shared, I don't know if you've shared them on the program, if you're willing to. You made a comment one time that one of the telescopes we have in space, the pictures go to a hospital.
Oh, yeah.
And also you made a comment about something that's housed in a Jesuit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'd like you to share that with some other people also.
Yeah, like me. I haven't heard any of this.
Well, the Hubble telescope, the command center, is in Johns Hopkins Hospital.
What?
Go look it up. That's exactly where it's at. The private contractor is housed at the Johns Hopkins Hospital. This is a dangerous thing when they play words in the space arena. They say they're privatizing the space program. That's not the word you want. You want commercializing. When they privatize, you get this situation. This private contractor that receives command signals from the Hubble telescope, the images, does not have to show you what he sees for 6 months. Unacceptable. And that's the way the status quo is right now. So I believe in real time, like the Viking 76, when it lands there, we see it live, uncut, not delayed, and we see it together. The other thing she talked about, here, I'll show you another thing. The National Technology Transfer Center of NASA. Okay, what do you think the headquarters of that should be? That's where we transfer the technology.
Where do I think it is? Houston, probably.
Well, it should be like where it was, Washington, D.C. or Houston. No. You know where it's now? Look it up. Jesuit College, Wheeling, West Virginia.
Jesuit College?
It's in the middle of a Jesuit college.
What?
I'll give you the 1-800 number to it.
No.
Anyhow, the thing is, how to get there? Well, ask the Pope of Pork Barrel, Senator Byrd. And it's a bad situation. They tried to bury the Technology Transfer Center, and they stuck it up there to kill it.
Oh, Senator, I've got a highway for you, Byrd.
Yeah, that's him.
Oh, I see. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Art Bell and David Adair. Hello.
Hello, how you doing tonight?
I'm fine. Where are you?
Well, this is my first time calling. This is the only number I could get down right away, but I'm calling from Tempe, Arizona.
Tempe, all right.
Yeah, I wanted to say hello, David.
Hey.
And I wanted to say that I am an experiencer, and I have had contact with extraterrestrials. I can't get into that right now, but David, I'm an artist, and I have a visual conception of the description you gave of this
engine.
Yeah, this engine.